Well, good morning. Welcome to Mount Olive Church. Those of you that are online, we're so glad you're joining us that way. Those of you that are going to join online later via podcast, so glad you joined us. And those of you in the chapel, also glad you're here. And if you're new with us, we give a special welcome sometimes when you're, you know, new, maybe new to the community, maybe first time in church, or it's been a long time and it's kind of a little nerve-wracking, you're not sure exactly what to expect. We just hope that you feel super welcomed and we're glad that you're here. It is Thanksgiving and we have so much to be thankful for, and it's good to come together and just thank God for what he's given us, and thank God for, well, thank God for God. He's a good God. We're in the middle of a series on David. David after God's heart is what the series is called. And so far in the series, David has been just an absolute hero at every turn and at every point. I mean, he is just the man. He's got it going on. We started this series with David and Goliath, you know, and David, he was the one who had the trust in God. He had put his hope in God, and because he had put his hope in God, it led him to great courage. And he had so much courage that he was the one who defeated Goliath, the giant. You know the story of David and Goliath. And no one else in in Israel, in the army, not even the king himself, King Saul, was willing to stand up and fight Goliath. But David had trust in God, and he fought Goliath, and he defeated him. An absolute hero. David was chosen as king, as Saul was rejected as king by God. And, you know, he was chosen as king when he was only like, you know, a teenager. He had it going on. And in fact, the text tells us that it says, the Lord, man looks at the outward appearance, but God looks at the heart. And God looked at David's heart, and David passed the test. And he was chosen as king. I mean, at every point, he's pure, he's good, he's right. And a few weeks ago, we looked at the story of Saul and David, and we saw how Saul became so absorbed with himself, so much so it led him to great jealousy of David. Where on the other hand, David, he had a certain level of unself-consciousness. It wasn't that he was unaware of himself. He had a self-awareness, but he just didn't spend that much time thinking about himself. And thus, it led him to be humble. And again, he's the hero. He's doing everything good. He's like perfect. He's perfect at every turn. In fact, maybe he's too perfect because he's kind of like unrelatably perfect. And if you're in this, you know, been listening along in this series, you know, maybe you've been thinking along the way, like, if that's what it takes to be a person after God's heart, I could never accomplish it. Because I could never be like David. I mean, he's unrelatably perfect. He's the hero. I could never be like David. Well, the story we're going to look at today is going to change your perspective on David. You know, maybe you're thinking, I've got all these failures and all these mistakes, and I've sinned and I've done these things and I'm bearing the consequences of that. I could never be like David. Well, David had some epic failures in his life. And probably his most notable failure, his most well-known failure is Bathsheba, right? He stole another man's wife, had a one-night stand. It wasn't quite a brilliant moment in his life. But we're not going to look at that story. The story we're going to look at, we'll save that for another day. The story we're going to look at today is probably less well known of a failure in David's life. And yet, if you just go by consequences, it was a far greater failure than even his one-night stand with Bathsheba. You know, loneliness is a terrible thing. And loneliness leads us to do some terrible things. Loneliness is a terrible thing. And sometimes when we're in the middle of loneliness, we make decisions that are just terrible. They're foolish. And the reason is, especially when you combine loneliness with fear, it just clouds our judgment. It ruins our judgment. It clouds our thinking. And when we're in the middle of loneliness, especially when loneliness is tied to fear, and maybe it's a fear of being lonely, we just make some decisions that just aren't all that brilliant. I bet if you looked at your own life, you could look back at some of your most regrettable moments, and I would dare guess that some of your most regrettable moments are tied to fear and tied to loneliness. You know, when you were in high school, you started to do some things that you just were so afraid of being alone that you would do almost anything to be in that friend group. And suddenly, you know, it turned into a habit that you've been trying to quit for a lot of years now, and it's a regrettable moment in your life. But it kind of came out of that cloud of loneliness, of fear. You know, maybe you started or got into some relationships that, you know, you're still paying the consequences of those relationships or that relationship, or you rebounded out of a broken relationship straight into another relationship because of fear and fear of loneliness. It makes us do some incredibly silly things. And it causes us to make some really, really dumb decisions because our judgment is just clouded. And it was also true of David. And maybe, you know, you haven't experienced the consequences of those decisions, but I bet if you've made some relational, if you've had some relational failures, your children are paying some of the consequences, your family, your wife, your husband. Maybe you've done some things that your future wife, your future husband is going to bear the consequences, and you made some decisions in the middle of loneliness, in the middle of fear, and they weren't all that smart. Well, today we're going to look at David, and we're going to look at a moment in David's life, and I've titled or described the moment of David's life as his knob moment. Not overly brilliant. A not overly brilliant moment. And obviously that's sarcastic because it was on the opposite spectrum of brilliant. It was like foolishness is as foolish. It was just stupid. And we're going to see just like, how did he get there? And on the outside, you know how this works, right? On the outside, when you're not clouded by fear and loneliness, you see someone making decisions, you're like, that doesn't even make sense. Why are you doing that? Because you're not in the middle of the cloud. Right? You're not in the middle of the loneliness. And this is David. He had a not overly brilliant moment, but it's also Nob because the place where this started was at the city of Nob. That's what the town was called. It was at the city of Nob. It was at Nob. So I told you at the beginning of the series that the theme verse for this series is Psalm 25, verse 1 and 5. And I just want to remind you of this because this is really important. Let's actually say it together out loud. Out loud. In you, Lord my God, I put my trust. My hope is in you all day long. And I told you at the beginning of this series that whenever David lived by this verse, and David wrote that, by the way, whenever David lived by his own words and he put his trust in God and he put his hope in God, life went pretty smooth for him. But every time he deviated from his own words, whenever he deviated from trusting in God and he took measures into his own hands and he took control and he said, I'm gonna do it my way, every time he did that, his life became unmanageable, and it just became disastrous. And we're going to see that as he stops trusting God, and in the moment of loneliness and fear, he says, I'm going to do it my way. His life becomes completely unmanageable for him. The other thing we're going to see in this story, because it's going to be helpful for us, is maybe you're in the middle of loneliness or you're afraid. And we're going to see there's in the story of David as he kind of makes his way to Nob, both the town of Nob and to his not overly brilliant moment. We're going to see that there were some warning signs, things that kind of should have rattled his brain to be like, wake up, stop doing it, kind of wake up moments. And they're going to be helpful for us as we journey through life to not journey into our not overly brilliant moments and live with the consequences of those moments, but to realize, hey, maybe I'm not thinking clearly. I need to step back. So, to set up the situation of David, David is a fugitive. He's on the run. He's been crowned king, but the acting king in Israel, which is King Saul, is still king, acting king in Israel. And Saul wants David's head. At least two or three times, he's thrown a spear at David to kill him. David has escaped each time. David escaped his own town with the help of his wife, which also happens to be Saul's daughter. He married Saul's daughter. And so Saul's own daughter-in-law or daughter helped David escape. He runs to Ramah. Saul sends, you know, people to Ramah to kill David. He's on the run. He's all alone. He's left his best friend, Jonathan. He's left his wife, Michael. He's left his mentor, which is Samuel, in Ramah. He's just a fugitive. He's on the run. He's all alone, and he's afraid. And this is what the text tells us. It says that David, at this state of loneliness and fear, David went to Nob, to Ahimelech, the priest. Now, Nob is just a few kilometers from Jerusalem, and although Nob was not a Levitical city or town, it wasn't a normal town where there would be priests and a place of worship, at that time, there were quite a number of descendants of Aaron, the priestly descendants, who lived in Nob, and they operated a little house of worship at Nob. And we know from this story, we're going to find out that some of Saul's attendants would frequent this house of worship in Nob. And one scholar I read, he's convinced actually that Nob and the place of worship in Nob was actually the central place of worship in Israel at that time in history. It was kind of like the state church. It was the central house of worship. It was at Nob. So David's on the run, and he decides to run to Nob to see Ahimelech. Now, why would he go to Nob? Why to go to this central place of worship? Well, as the story goes, we're probably going to find out maybe one of the reasons he went to Nob. Well, Ahimelech trembled when he met him, and he asked, "Why are you alone? Why is no one with you?" Ahimelech realized very quickly, something's not right about this picture. See, David had killed Goliath and become an instant folk hero. Saul, the king, had given him, you know, a number of men to go out and fight battles against the enemy Philistines. In fact, David has already at this point been made commander of the royal bodyguard. David would never go anywhere alone. He would always have his entourage with him. He'd always have some men with him. But all of a sudden, Ahimelech thinks something's not right. And I wonder if the rumors were already swirling that there had been a falling out between Saul, the king, and his son-in-law, David. Because Saul has already told his son, Jonathan, kill David. He's told all of his attendants, kill David. He sent three groups of troops to Ramah to kill David. He went to Ramah himself to kill David. I mean, if Nob was a place where Saul's attendants would go, word's probably getting out. Something's not right between Saul and David. And Ahimelech picks up and he says, why are you alone? Explain yourself. Something's not right here. Where's your entourage of men? And you know what David does in this moment? He lies. David answered Ahimelech, the priest. He said, "The king sent me on a mission and said to me, 'No one is to know anything about the mission I am sending you on. It's a secret.'" But do you know what the real secret was? David's not on a mission. He just lied to a man of God, the priest at Nob, Ahimelech. He lied to him. And then he speaks a second lie. He said, "And as for my men, I have told them to meet me at a certain place." Some place, certain place. Very vague. More lies. And this should have been a wake-up call for David. David, who spoke the truth, who loved honesty, who loved integrity, suddenly he finds himself running to Nob and lying to a man of God he didn't need to lie to. It should have just shook him and be like, what am I doing? And this is one of the first wake-up calls that we see for David, is feeling the need to lie to others and yourself should be a wake-up call that you're maybe on the road to Nob, to your not overly brilliant moment, a moment that you're gonna regret years from now. And for David, this should have been a wake-up call, but also for you. In what areas of your life are you lying to yourself right now? And you're saying, "It's not a big deal, it's just one night. No one's ever gonna go, no, it's not gonna hurt anyone." And you're lying to yourself, and maybe you're lying to your spouse, or you're lying to your parents. It should be a wake-up call. Maybe I'm in the cloud of loneliness and fear and I'm making some decisions that I'm going to regret later. Maybe I'm on my way to Nob. Well, David gets the trust of Ahimelech. And so he has some requests. He says, "Now then, what do you have on hand? Give me 5 loaves of bread and whatever you can find. I need some food." Remember, he's a fugitive. He needs someone to help him. And so he asks for this. And then he's going to ask for another thing. But before he does, the writer of the text lets us in on some important information that doesn't really make any sense right now, but it's important later, so I'm going to tell you. He says, "Now one of Saul's servants was there that day at Nob, detained before the Lord. He was Doeg the Edomite, Saul's chief shepherd." And this is going to be important later. Well, after David gets his bread and he gets his food, he makes one other request of Ahimelech. David asked Ahimelech, he said, "Don't you have a spear or a sword here? I haven't brought my sword or any other weapon because the king's mission was urgent." And at first hand, it's like, well, there's nothing wrong with asking for a spear. Nothing wrong with asking for a sword. I mean, this is pretty common. Often people would carry swords and spears. But the reason this is maybe a tip to David, this wasn't a right thing for David to do, was because of the situation he found himself in. He's running from his enemy. He's running from his enemy. And just four chapters earlier, when David faced his greatest enemy, Goliath, David preached a message to Goliath, his own words. And David said this. He said, Goliath, you come at me with sword and spear and javelin, but I come at you in the name of the Lord. And then David said this, all those gathered here today will know that it is not by sword or spear that the Lord saves. For the battle is the Lord's, and he will give all of you into our hands. Just previously, David had preached this message, it's not by sword that the Lord saves. And he faced the giant, he faced his enemy, someone who wanted him dead. And he said, I'm gonna put my trust in the Lord. And now David faces another enemy, King Saul, who wants his head and wants him dead. And instead of going to the Lord and saying, my hope is in you, Lord, my hope is in you all day long, David says, I'm gonna take measures into my own hands. And Israel's not a very large place. And there weren't that many places of worship. I'm sure David knew what was going on, that there might be a sword here at Nob. And so he asks, could I have a sword? Ahimelech, the priest, replied, the sword of Goliath, the Philistine, whom you killed in the valley of Elah, is here. It is wrapped in a cloth behind the ephod. If you want it, take it. There is no sword here but that one. No sword here but that one. And then David said, there is none like it. Give it to me. You know, the sword David is after is the sword of a man who had trusted in that sword and is now dead. The sword David is after is the sword of a man. It's Goliath's sword. And Goliath had trusted in that sword, and Goliath is now dead. Wake up, David, right? It reminds me of an old Western I saw. It's not that old, actually, but it's a Western movie I saw a number of years ago. And there's this scene where the outlaws are chasing down this train to take over the train and get the treasure from the train. And so they're chasing down this train. There's this short shootout between those on the train and the outlaws. The outlaws win. They stop the train and they collect all the treasure. And then there's this scene where one of the outlaws is holding something that's obviously very special to him, and he's kind of just stroking it. And one of the outlaws looks at him and says, hey, man, what'd you find? And he says, I found this lucky rabbit's foot. I got it off that dead guy over there. And the guy says, I don't think that one's working anymore. This is exactly what someone should have told David. David's like, there's none like it. I got the sword of Goliath. Someone's got to tell David, I don't think that one's working anymore. Remember, you killed him in the valley of Elah. He's dead. Maybe you should put your trust in something else. And this leads us to wake-up call number two for David. And that is when you start doing the very things you've advised others not to do. Just as David told Goliath, don't trust in a sword. A sword can't save you. Trust in the Lord. Now, David turns and he does the exact thing he had told someone else not to do. And this should be a wake-up call for us as well. Are you doing some things that you've advised others not to do? You're jumping into a relationship and you told someone else, don't jump into a relationship so fast. And now you're jumping into because you're lonely, you're afraid. You know, maybe you're a high school kid, and when you were 12 or 10, you looked at 16 and 18-year-olds and you said, why are they doing that? Why do they live that way? I'm never gonna do that. And now you're 16 and 18 and you're doing the very same things you said you would never do. You start doing the things that you have advised others not to do. In what ways do you need to wake up? Do we need to wake up? You may be on your way to Nob, a not overly brilliant moment. Well, David gets the sword of Goliath. And then guess what David does with the sword of Goliath, who was a champion from Gath. He takes the sword of Goliath, who was a champion from Gath, and guess where he goes? It's a very bizarre story. So that day, David fled from Saul and went to Achish, king of Gath. But the servants of Achish said to him, isn't this David, the king of the land of Israel, right? I mean, he's a hero. Isn't he the one they sing about in their dances? That Saul has slain his thousands and David his tens of thousands? And didn't they start singing that song after David killed Goliath, who's from our hometown? And now David shows up with the sword of Goliath all by himself in enemy territory. It's like, what are you thinking? Anyways, so David took these words to heart and was very much afraid of Achish, king of Gath. I think at this point, all of a sudden, everything came crashing down on him in the sense of, oh shoot, what have I just done? I think at this point, David's thinking, what am I thinking? Why am I doing this? And all of a sudden it comes just kind of crashing down and he's afraid because he realizes, I'm hooped. I just took the sword of Goliath into enemy territory. This was not my brightest moment. And so David does something to get out of the situation. He kind of acts the way he's been acting all along. So David pretended to be insane in their presence. And while he was in their hands, he acted like a madman, making marks on the doors of the gate and letting saliva run down his beard. He just starts acting like he's lost his mind. And as the story goes, the king of Achish is like, I think I got enough idiots around me. I don't need any more. So get rid of this guy. And David escapes with his life out of enemy territory. It's a bizarre story. It's a bizarre story of where a not overly brilliant moment can lead to. And decisions made in the cloud of loneliness and fear, what it can lead to. But it's also a very, very sad, sad story. Because as the story would continue, you remember Doeg the Edomite? Well, he shows up in the story. And he tells Saul that David, he cited David at Nob. And he saw Ahimelech help David. So Saul, who is an enemy of David, he brings Ahimelech before him. He says, what are you doing helping my enemy? And Ahimelech plays innocence. He said, I didn't know he was your enemy. He's your son-in-law. He killed Goliath. He saved us from the Philistines. He's a commander in your army. I didn't realize. I thought I was helping one of our people. And Saul says, no, you've helped my enemy and you're going to die. And he tells his army to kill Ahimelech, but none of them would touch him because he was a man of God. And so Doeg, the Edomite, kills Ahimelech. And not only Ahimelech, he kills all the men of the priestly line, 85 men, Ahimelech's uncles, his brothers, his cousins, his sons. He kills them all and he kills their wives and children. And then he goes to Nob and he kills every man, woman, child, and infant. Donkeys and cattle. He wipes out the entire city and town of Nob. There was one son of Ahimelech who escaped. His name was Abithar. And he would run to David and he told David all that had occurred. And at that point, suddenly David realized the full consequences of his not overly brilliant moment. It wasn't a consequence he had to pay individually, but it was a huge consequence that others paid enormously. And David responded to Abithar. He said, I am responsible for the death of your whole family. Suddenly it came crashing down and David realized, what was I thinking? Why did I do it? I knew some things and I shouldn't have, but I did. Now, obviously, David was not firsthand responsible. He wasn't the one who killed all those people. But David realized that it was his decisions that were not overly brilliant, that had led to this occurrence. You know, I wonder in your life, in mine, what not overly brilliant moments we have. And I imagine you can look back and there's some regrettable moments in your life. Maybe they're financial, maybe they're relational. Maybe there's something else, moral. And you made decisions thinking it was the right thing for that time. And now as you've gotten out of the cloud of loneliness and fear, you see things a bit more clearly and you see that it wasn't all that brilliant. In fact, maybe you're living through the consequences of those decisions. Maybe those that are close to you are living the consequences of those decisions. I think the story of David is helpful for us in the sense that it gives us some wake-up calls. Because when we're in the cloud, we can't always see properly. And for David, there was two wake-up calls. One was feeling the need to lie to others or yourself. And I want to challenge or encourage you, in what areas of your life are you feeling the need to lie to others or yourself right now? And by lie, I mean even be sneaky, because being sneaky and covering up stuff is a way of not being truthful about what's really going on. In what ways are you sneaking around? Maybe you're sneaking in at night or you're sneaking out at night. Maybe you've got a set of emails or text messages that you would never let your husband or your wife see, that you never let your family see. And you're kind of sneaking around and it's not a big deal and you're lying to yourself. And you're lying to others. You know, and what photos do you have that you know you need to Snapchat those because you want them to disappear? Or you've taken photos of yourself or received photos from others that you just know you wouldn't let anyone see. You don't want anyone to know. And you're sneaking around and you're lying to yourself. And it's not going to be a big deal. It's not hurting anyone. But you're living in a cloud right now. And you're not seeing right. And if you find yourself lying to others or yourself, it should be a wake-up call. You're on your way to Nob. And it's going to hurt. You know, the second wake-up call for David was, you know, when you start doing the very things you've advised others to do. In what ways, in what areas of your life are you maybe compromising or going against the very things that you've said? And you're thinking it's not a big deal, but you need to understand you're on your way to Nob. And there's going to be consequences. It's going to hurt. And today, as you think about that, it's your chance to turn and go another direction. You don't have to keep going in that way. You know, maybe for you today, you're looking at this and you're like, that would have been really helpful, Elvin, 15 years ago. Because I went to Nob. And I had my Nob moment, and I'm paying the consequences. What hope is there for me today? I think that's where the story of David gives so, so much hope. Because as the story ends, David speaks some words, not in the story in 1 Samuel, but it's a psalm that David wrote, and he wrote this psalm directly after he escaped Achish, king of Gath. And it shows how God is with us. And David wrote this. He said, I sought the Lord, and he answered me. He shouldn't have. I didn't deserve him answering me. But I sought the Lord. I'd been going my direction. I'd been living life my way. I wasn't trusting in God. But suddenly I turned. I looked to the Lord and he answered me. And he delivered me from all my fears. My fears, my loneliness. God showed up when I turned my eyes to him. And I said, in you, Lord, my God, I put my trust. My hope is in you. All day long, God showed up and he delivered me. I tried delivering myself and I made a mess of my life. He turned to God. And he says, those who look to him are radiant. Their faces are never covered with shame. This poor man called. Maybe you're feeling like a bit of a poor man today or a poor woman. You say, I don't deserve God to answer me. I've made a mess of my life. I'm living in the outcome of decisions I made that were terrible decisions. I've got nothing to bring before the Lord. I don't have goodness. I don't have a good life. I don't have righteousness. I have nothing. I'm just a poor person. David says, I was poor. I had nothing to offer God, but the Lord heard him and he saved him out of all his troubles. God shows up to us when we're poor, when we got nothing. When we finally give up and stop trying to earn it on our own, trying to take life and do it on our own, and he saves us. The angel of the Lord encamps around those who fear him, and he delivers them. Taste and see that the Lord is good. Blessed is the one who takes refuge in him. This is my prayer for you. If you're living the consequences of your Nob experience, that you would taste and see that in the middle of the consequences that you would stop trying to do it on your own and you see finally that God is good. The Lord is good. I've tasted and I've seen. I'm putting my trust in him. And you would be blessed as you take refuge in him. You know, the story of David shows us this, that God works even in our not overly brilliant moments. Even when we're a poor man and a poor woman and we don't deserve his attention, that God still shows up and he works and he saves. And he continues to save. So I don't know where you're at. Maybe today the message for you is wake up, snap out of it. You've been lying to yourself. You've been lying to others. You're on your way to Nob. Don't keep going in that direction. Make a turn. Would you trust in the Lord? Maybe for you it's a wake-up call that says, you know, you've been doing the very things you've advised others not to do. You're doing the same things you told your kids not to do. And this is your wake-up moment. Today's your day where you stop the trajectory of your life and you put your trust in the Lord and you go his way. Maybe for you today, you're living in the consequences of some terrible decisions that were made in the terrible state of loneliness. And the message for you today is, God hasn't left you. Would you taste? Would you see that he's good? Would you turn to him in the state, in the place that you're in right now? Let's pray together. Father, thank you for your word. Thank you for the story, the life of David that we learned so much from. And God, he wasn't a perfect guy. He made some terrible mistakes. He lived in the middle of pain, in the middle of fear, in the middle of loneliness. And yet, God, you continually showed up in his life. So God, today I pray that if there's some today that this message was for them because they're on a road to Nob, they're making decisions that are not brilliant at all, that today would be the day they turn, and they turn to you. And God, I pray for those that maybe are living in the middle of their consequences, and maybe their friends and their family and their kids are living in those consequences, that they would taste and see that the Lord is good, that you're a God who delivers us, that saves us. When we come to you poor as we are, you save us. God, for those that maybe are dealing with the condemnation of those terrible decisions, would today be a reminder that you are good. Your word says there is now no condemnation for those who are in Christ Jesus. Taste and see that the Lord is good. God, we declare that you are good. Thank you for sending Jesus to be the sacrifice for our sins so that we could stand before you unashamed, made clean in your presence. We thank you for these things. Amen. Thanks so much for joining us today. We trust you have been encouraged and challenged in your faith journey. If you're desiring prayer, want more information on our church, want to partner with us, or be involved in any way, please go to our website at mountoliveefc.com. We'll see you next time.